will just read the... First of all, good morning, everybody. Nobody said good morning. I'll do that again. Good morning, everybody. Okay, good. Okay. Chapter 4. The man who had fled from the battle that day arrived in Shiloh. And he tells the people of Shiloh, and then he tells Eli what had happened. Who is the man that fled from the battle that day? That was Shaul, the son of Kish, the one who was going to be the first king of Israel. And I believe that we mentioned the statement of our rabbis that he was the one who struggled with Goliath and took the Luchot HaBrit. You know, the Luchot HaBrit, he did not fall into the hands of Plishtim. And then in Pasuk 18, Vayehi Kazkiro et Aron HaElokim, this is when Shaul, the Mevaser, the one who was bringing the news, when he told Eli about the Ark of God, Vayehi Kazkiro et Aron HaElokim, Vayipol Me'al Akizi Acharanit, Eli fell backwards from the chair, Bi'ad Yad Hashar, by the place against the gate, Vatishover Mafrakto, and his neck was broken by a mot, and he died. Kizakein ha'ishu kaved, he was old, and he was heavy. Vuhu shafatet Yisrael arvayim shana, he judged Israel for 40 years. V'chalato eshet Pinchas hora lalat, his daughter-in-law, the wife of Pinchas, was pregnant and was giving birth. Vatishma tashmua, she heard. El hilakach aron ha'elukim. Here we see the same thing. What is it that shakes her most? Just as what is it that has the deepest impact on Eli? Not so much his personal tragedy, but the tragedy that Aron HaElokim, the Ark of God, had been taken. And that's why it says in Pasuk 18, when he mentioned the Aron HaElokim, when he mentioned that the Aron had been taken captive, that's when he fell. The daughter-in-law of Eli, when she heard El Hilakach Aron HaElokim, that the Aron HaElokim was taken, Umeit Chamiha V'Isha, and that her father-in-law and husband had died, Vatichra Vateled Ki Nehku Aleha Tzida, she bent over and sort of her pains came with greater intensity, and she prepared to give birth. And she was dying now in childbirth. As she was dying, those who were standing around her said to her, Al Tidi, do not be afraid, ki bein yolodit, because you've given birth to a son. Velo anta, she didn't answer. Velo shata lipa, she paid absolutely no attention to it at all. She knew that she was dying, and she is distraught not only over her own tragedy that is coming and her father-in-law and her husband, but El Hilakach Aron HaElokim, that the Aron HaElokim had been taken. Vatikro Lamar I Kavod, she called the child that was born, she called him I Kavod, the mother. She is dying, but she still has the presence of mind to call him Ikavod, lack of honor, the absence of honor. Lamar saying Golo Kavod mi Israel, the honor of Israel has gone into exile, and that referred to Hilakach Aron HaElokim, that the Aron HaElokim had been taken for El Chomia V'Ishan, about her father-in-law and her husband. There are two things that seem to be happening here side by side. First of all, what all of chapter 4 is precisely what Shmuel said would happen. He said it at the end of chapter 3. Chapter 4 tells us that everything he said, and maybe even more than Klal Yisrael could ever have imagined, everything happened, not a single word that Shmuel said, as the Pasuk said earlier, fell to the ground. He said, he was the one who said that something was going to happen, that the ears of all, a davar, something is going to happen, be Israel. something is going to happen be Israel that everyone's ears are going to tremble. And he also prophesied the destruction of the house of Eli. And in chapter 4, everything is described. Something happens that never happened before, nor did it ever happen afterwards. We're talking about a tragedy of profound proportions. The Aron Elokim, this represents, in a sense, God himself being taken off into captivity. This is going to have profound ramifications, as we will see in the next two parakim, profound ramifications as far as the faith of Klal Yisrael. There's something about their faith that is shaken. It looks as though God is being taken into exile, captured by the Plishtim. And the death of Eli, the death of his sons, the death of his daughter-in-law, we're talking about tragedy compounded upon tragedy. And so first of all, it means that precisely what Shmuel had said did indeed happen. But even as we watch the house of Eli disappearing into oblivion, there's something very commendable. In other words, if we're going to, if I would want to tell you, Kol HaOmer, whoever says Bnei Eli sinned is making a mistake, or that Eli's sin was that great, if I would want to prove it, I would just take you through Pasuk 18. Let's go Pasuk by Pasuk. And it came to pass when he mentioned Aron HaElokim, the Ark of God, Eli falls and dies. Pasuk 19. The wife of Pinchas, she heard that the Aron HaElokim had been taken. And she begins the process really of birth and death at the same time. In a sense, that's also what's happening. There is a death, in a certain sense, of Klal Yisrael taking place, that is going to be the beginning of a birth. The house of Eli is in the process of disappearing, but Shmuel and then ultimately Malchus is going to rise. In Pasuk 21, she calls the boy Ikavod again for the third time now. El hilakach Aron HaElokim, that the Aron HaElokim is taking. Pasuk 22, Vatomer Gola Kavod Mi Yisrael, Ki Nilkach Aron HaElokim. Those are the last words that she says, and she dies. That means even in the process of the tragedy, the destruction of the house of Eli, what is it that looms large in their eyes and in their minds? The Aron HaElokim is the great tragedy of all. So therefore, it seems just as the house of Eli is disappearing, the Pasuk really, in a subtle manner, is telling us that we're not talking about people who had simply gone ahead and made sport and mockery of the house of God. God expected a great deal more, and they did not measure up to what it was that God wanted. If one is going to, I just want to remove the impression as though the house of God had turned into what Yirmiyo, remember we read Yirmiyo, Hamo'orat Poritzim Hayah HaBayit Hazeh, has this house become a den of thieves? Even when Yirmiyo was saying that, it doesn't mean that the house of God has turned into just some kind of a terrible place. It means that there are expectations that God has, and those expectations were not met. If we see it even in the daughter-in-law of Eli, the wife of Pinchas, it's Aron HaElokim. They feel and they sense the profound tragedy, as though God is being taken into captivity. Gola kavod mi Yisrael, the honor of Israel is gone. So I say that side by side with the punishment, the destruction of the house of Eli, there is something very profound that is being said in their favor. So that it balances out the negative feelings that we may have about them, and most probably is the editorial comment on how bad, so to speak, their sin was. Not bad on the level that we would have imagined. For them it was bad. Let's go. We're moving ahead. O plishtim lokhu et aron ha'elukim vayivu me'evan ha'ezer ashdoda, and the plishtim, I'm not going to translate this yet until we come to the next pasuk, because here is I believe another one of the classic examples of something that I have demonstrated to you a number of times and where it made a great deal of difference. Here I don't believe it makes that much difference, but the structure, the grammatic structure is very important. Plishtim took the Aron HaElokim, the Ark of God, Vayiviyuhu, and they brought it may Even HaEzer Ashdod, or they took to Ashdod. Ashdod was one of the major cities of Plishtim. Vayikku Plishtim et Aron HaElokim, the Plishtim took the Ark of Elokim, Vayaviyu Oto Beit Dagon, and they brought it to the house of Dagon, Vayatzigu Oto Eitzel Dagon, and they stood it up near Dagon. Dagon was there, was the god, the deity of Plishtim. Dagon. It seems Dagon was a figure that was part man and part fish. Dagon. Now, take a look at the beginning of Pasuk Aleph and then the beginning of Pasuk Bet. Uplishtim lakhu vayikhu plishtim. What's the difference between the two? Uplishtim lakhu vayikhu plishtim. We have demonstrated this a number of times. Uplishtim lakhu, where the verb comes after the noun, it means uplishtim lakhu plishtim had taken. In other words, this is a flashback to something that had happened earlier. Because in fact, in chapter 4, the Plishtim had taken the Aron HaElokim in Pasuk Yud Aleph. In Pasuk 11, in Perek 4, it says that Aron HaElokim was taken. Then in middle of it all, there was an interruption in order to tell us the story of the fall of the house of Eli. That Shaul comes running to Shiloh and he tells the people in the city. Then he tells Eli the birth of Ichabod and the death of the daughter-in-law of Eli. So now what's happening is we're going back to what happened before. So there are two things. Number one, the first pasuk is talking about the fact that the Aron had been captured in battle. But that had already been told to us in the chapter before. So therefore it says, Uplishtim lakhu, the Plishtim had taken from Israel the Aron HaElokim. In the second pasuk, we're talking about now what are they doing with it once they have the Aron HaElokim. Now, Vayikhu Plishtim, the Plishtim took the Aron and placed it next to their god, Dagon. Now, there are two ways to look at this. It could be a great embarrassment for Aron HaElokim, or it could also indicate they have great respect for the Aron HaElokim as well. Where is the place that they choose to put the Aron HaElokim? In what to them is the holiest of holies, next to their own god. So they brought him to bed. Dagon v'yatzigu otayitzel Dagon v'yashkimu Ashdodim v'machrat. The Ashdodim got up the following morning. V'hinei Dagon nofel l'fanav arza lifnei Aron Hashem. Behold, Dagon has fallen before him. In other words, Dagon fell over, and it looks as though you see the scene. Dagon is bowing down before the Aron Hashem. I think what's very fascinating. And we have to try and figure it out. Up until now, if I'm not mistaken, the Aron has been referred to as Aron HaElokim exclusively. Now, at this point, all of a sudden it becomes Aron Hashem Yudke Vavke. It, there are so many differences between Elohim and Yudke Vavke. But let's say that at least one difference here. Aron Elohim, remember we said often, Elohim is the universal name of God. Yudke Vavke represents the specific, warm, close name, the intimate name by which we know, God. Yudke Vavke is the God of great miracles. Elohim, is it possible that the term Elohim had been used up until now because by the Oron being taken captive, it would seem as though it is an Elohim like other Elohims? Isn't there something, you know, in the great mythology of Greece and all of the ancient world, there were battles between the gods. And sometimes gods lost the battle. Here, it might seem to the Plishtim as though there's a struggle going on between Dagon and the God of Israel. And in that sense, the God of Israel is an Elohim just like other Elohims. Sometimes they win, and sometimes they lose. But what's happening over here is, the morning after they have brought Elohim and placed him next to Dagon, the manifestation of Elohim becomes Yudke Vavke. No. This is not an Elohim like all other Elohims. This is the Yudke Vavke, the one who defines nature, and therefore he is the one who intervenes. There's something from the depths of Elohim is becoming Yudke Vavke again. To them, to the Plishtim, he is going to appear as Yudke Vavke. To Jews, and during the course of the struggle, it seems as though it's an Elohim that lost the battle. What we're talking about over here is, and I'm going to show it to you later, there is a certain loss of faith. All great tragedies bring with them concomitantly a loss of faith. There's something in us that dies. What is it that dies within us at any great tragedy? Somewhere, either consciously or unconsciously, is the question, where was God? Why did God let this happen? Didn't they say this earlier? Lamina gafanu, why did God smite us when they lost the battle? All right, let's vayikhu et Dagon vayoshivu otolim komo. They took Dagon and they put him back in his place. Vayashkimu baboke mimacharat. The next day, second day, they get up in the morning. Vihinei Dagon nofel lefonav arza lifnei Aron Hashem. Dagon has fallen before him on his face, before the Aron Hashem, v'rosh Dagon u'shtei kapot yadav, krutot al ha-miftan, rak Dagon nishar alav. The first day, an entire Dagon had fallen, and maybe now in retrospect, even that seems to be very miraculous. You know, big, heavy statue, I don't know, falls, it should break. The second day what happens is, his head is fallen off, and his two hands are cut off, and they're lying on the threshold that as you enter the house of Dagon, Rak Dagon nishar alav. You know, it most probably was a pedestal. Dagon was standing on a pedestal, so the only thing that remained on the pedestal was Dagon, or the dug part of Dagon. But the head of Dagon and maybe the body of Dagon all had fallen before God, before Aron Hashem. The response or the reaction of the Plishtim is fascinating. Al kein lo yidrechu chohanei Dagon v'chol habayim beit Dagon al miftan Dagon ba'ashdod ad hayom hazeh. Therefore, the priests of Dagon, the people of Plishtim, and whoever comes into the house of Dagon, they don't step on the threshold. They cross over the threshold. You know what this means. How should they have looked at this experience that has now happened for the second day, and on the second day, it's a great deal worse than it was on the first day? What is the maskana hamidbakeshet? What is the what should be the conclusion that one should reach? The conclusion that one should reach obviously is that Dagon is not a deity, is not a god, and has no power. It's extremely, extremely difficult for man to suddenly turn around in the midst of life and say, I've been living a lie all of my life. I've been serving this Dagon my whole life. I have been bowing down three times a day to Dagon. I have brought sacrifices to Dagon. And all of a sudden to say that, to see the obvious. What they should have seen is the obvious, that Dagon is not, I mean, there are a lot of Dagons in the sea. It's finished. It's finished. That should have been the conclusion that they reached. But no, man can't do that. Extremely, extremely difficult and near impossible, even when one is faced with the truth. You even see the truth there. But the truth can be very painful. And if the truth can be very painful, then you just have to find some way to reinterpret events in such a way that they should not be as painful as they are. I mean, this is happening to nations and to people all the time. We simply reinterpret. We revise history if history is too painful to look at it in the face. So we revise it. That's all. There's a whole industry of revisionist history. Those who don't want to look at the Shoah or the extreme ugliness of what Germany has become. So what do? You can't face the truths. So you know what? You simply change the truth. That's all. You revise it. There's a revisionist history that's taking place over here. They can't face the idea that this God of Israel, whom we've taken captive, our Dagon is falling and is broken before. They can't accept that. Then there's another thing. I believe the order in which things are written in this pasuk is also extremely important. Therefore, who doesn't step on the threshold? It begins with Kohanei Dagon. They're the ones who lead the pack. They have the most to lose. They've got a vested interest. You understand? Kohanei Dagon have a vested interest. What's their whole profession, their whole livelihood, their whole status, everything that they are is inextricably intertwined and interrelated with Dagon. With the fall of Dagon, it means the ganze business is over. Ois kapulitschmacher, as they would say. They're no Kohanim. Not only they're no Kohanim, they would turn out to be people who have for all of these years led their congregations down the garden path. So what you need is you have to come up with a quick interpretation. And then even today we are our masters. You know, a mistake is made by somebody big. So you know, you find some way. There's always some way to smooth things over. So what is it that they could have? They could have done over here. I don't know. They may have created a whole story as though the fact that Dagon was here, this makes this holy, and therefore anybody who walks into the house of Dagon has to walk in with a sense of fear and trepidation. And before you know it, I have a feeling that what's taking place here is they are taking an absolute disaster, and they're turning it into a great victory. A great victory. And if you think this is this is not done, it's done all the time. I was reading an article, in the Jewish Observer. This tape, of course, is only for those who are present here. I was reading an article in the Jewish Observer
after the elections, you know, the Chukarva, that's a magazine of our Buddhist Soil of America that appears in the United States, slick magazine. So I'm reading an article, I get it a few months later, if I'm around somebody, I pick it up. So I'm reading an article about the elections that had taken place in June. And the beginning of the article is somebody who is only a casual observer of the scene in Israel will think that the religious parties that went down in the number of members of Knesset, that they had a, there was a defeat. Oh no! That's a very superficial way of looking at it. This was a great victory for the religious parties. All of a sudden, I'm reading, God, I want to know, how do you turn a defeat into victory? So the second half of the article was that numbers doesn't make that much difference, but the important thing is, since Dekel HaTorah and Akudas Yisrael came together, and there's peace and harmony and love and tranquility in the religious community, so this is great, this is worth it all. I'm telling you, I read, and all of a sudden, I'm actually a little bit more than just an observer on the scene. I'm wondering, bin ich Meshige, or is this guy Meshige? I never read anything of the sort. I thought it was crazy. I gave it to somebody else, and I asked him, reader, am I reading it correctly? Am I reading about the great victory of religious Jewry in the elections? And the great sense of harmony and beauty, and they lived that. Matovu manoim sheves hachem gam yachdusam. I says, you know, you're right, there's something wrong over here. Of all things, I go back the next day to the place where I bought the Jewish Observer, someplace in Harnov, and I say, you know, I want my money back. No, I want my money back. I read an article over there, an article that's an absolute lie from beginning to end. And I told him what the article was about. So the fellow who owns the store says to me, listen, if you want to, you see the guy standing next to you? He wrote the article. Ask him! So I turned to the fellow, here's somebody else who had walked in, and I said, you wrote that? So he says, listen, Rabbi Gold, don't judge me on that article. It was the worst one I ever wrote. And I never met the fellow, but I know his I know his name, and I've read other things from him. He said, the worst article I ever wrote. Then I turned to him and I said, let me ask you, were you commissioned to write that article? Did they ask you to write that article? He said, yes. The example that I'm giving is, it's possible to take defeat and just turn it into to victory. A few fancy sentences here and there, and really no more than a great deal of sheker, and you've turned a real defeat into victory. It's being done all the time. And that's precisely what Kohanei Dagon did. We do it on a personal level as well. We're not always ready to admit the defeat or admit that we made a mistake. We find some kind of a silver lining. We, wasn't that bad. To be able to admit straight out, I made a terrible mistake. So if we're talking about a one-time mistake, all right, we can do that. I think most of us are big enough or honest enough to be able to say, you know, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. But here we're talking about people whose whole life has been a mistake. Can't do that. And then we're talking about people whose whole professional life has been based on the fact that Dagon is a great God. At the root of it all, they're making loads of money on Dagon. They have power because of Dagon. They have prominence. They have position. So they made a story. All that I gave you, the example of the Jewish Observer, and you'll notice it all the time. You'll notice that it's happening time and time again. Either revisionist history, you rewrite history, or you take what clearly is a horrible defeat, and you just reinterpret it a little bit. We're doing it all the time. All the time. Let's go further. And now it's again, now it's already the hand of Yud Kei Vav Kei. It's becoming stronger and heavier. The heart, hand of God is coming heavier on the Ashdodim by Yishimein, and he made them desolate. There's a feeling of desolation, confusion. Vayach Otam, interesting word. Ba'a, in the text it's written Ba'afolim, but in when we read it, it's read Tchorim. Tchorim really means... Hemorrhoids, or something even in worse. Boils in the rectal area. In a sense, in the Kishkot, it's something internal. At Ashdod bet Gvuleo, Ashdod and all of the entire boundary of Ashdod. Ashdod was a city state, so that Ashdod represented not only the city of Ashdod, but all of those around Ashdod. Vayiru anshei Ashdod ki kein, the people of Ashdod saw that it is so. They saw what's happening to them. Vamru, when they said, Lo yeshev Aron Elokei Yisrael imanu, the Aron Elokei Yisrael shall not live, stay with us. You see, they're not capable yet of seeing it as Aron Yudkei Vavke. Now that already would require of them a much more intimate knowledge of the God of Israel. At best, they can see him now as Elokei Yisrael, the God of Israel. Let him not stay with us, because his hand has become heavy upon us. Val Dagon Eloheinu, and upon Dagon our God. Don't you see precisely what has happened? Now we get an even greater insight into the story that's taking place. Terrible defeat for Dagon. But you know what? It is a battle with the gods. Less struggle around. The God of Israel lost the battle. Here was a struggle, so Dagon lost this battle. That's all. But Dagon still remains Eloheinu. Nothing has changed. Still our God. You know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. Who are we to get involved in the struggle? If there's a struggle between Gedolim, if there's a struggle between God, we are going to get involved in it. So therefore, what do you do? You simply remove Elohei Yisrael from here, you know. Okay. There were even those who said this was the God who, and we read it in the last parak, this was the God who had saved, who had destroyed the Egyptians. And their feeling was, why did they go to war against this God whom they had heard such great things about? Said maybe he was able to overcome the Mitzrim. In other words, the God of Israel was stronger than the God of Egypt, but he's not necessarily stronger than Dagon. Now they see that he's stronger than Dagon as well. They sent and they gathered together all of the officers of Plishtim unto them. They said, what should we do? Vayomer, they said, Gat Yisov Aron Elokei Yisrael. Vayasevu et Aron Elokei Yisrael. I haven't seen the Mefarshim say anything about it, but the same phrase appears three times in this pasuk. Aron Elokei Yisrael, the Ark of the God of Israel. There must be some idea, some message that they want to impart here. Maybe a growing consciousness that this is Aron Elokei Yisrael. So what should we do? So they decided they're going to send the ark to God. After they had turned and sent away the ark, the hand of God came down upon the city of Ashdod. Because what the city of Ashdod was doing, they were simply removing the ark from their presence, but they had not learned how they're supposed to deal with it. They should have understood that the ark should be sent back. They should have understood that. They didn't understand that. Therefore, after the ark leaves, the hand of God comes down even with greater strength upon the city, and there was great confusion. Vayachat anshei ha'ir mikatom vagadol, the entire city from small until great. Vayisatru lahem Afolim, in their secret places, in other words, In a sense, what's happening is that the boils and the hemorrhoids are going further and further into the body. They sent the Aron Elokim to Ekron. Look at what's happening in this pasuk. They sent the Aron Elokim to Ekron. Aron Elokim. When the Aron Elokim came to Ekron, the people of Ekron cried out. And what did they say when they cried out? When they're crying out from pain, they don't refer to it as the anonymous Aron Elokim. When they cry out with pain, do you know what they say? Hesebu al Eleinu. Hesebu Elai et Aron Elokei Yisrael. What's happening here is there's a purpose to the suffering. We had explained a number of times, God does not simply punish for the sake of punishment or torture. There's a process of education that is involved in all suffering and in all punishment. The process of education over here is they have to learn that this Aron Elokim, what some of them still think is Aron Elokim, is really, you know, the Aron of another one of God in that whole gallery of gods. That this is Aron Elokei Yisrael. That's what they have to know. That's what they have to know. And when they cry out, that's precisely what they say. Then they sent and they gathered together all of the officers of Plishtim Vayomru. What did they all say? When all of them gather, they said, Shalchu et Aron Elokei Yisrael, send away the ark of the God of Israel, Yashav, and come on, let him return to his place. V'lo yamit oti v'et ami, he shouldn't kill me and my people. Ki haitam humat mavet b'chol ha'ir. Kovdom yod yad ha'elokim sham. There was a confusion unto death in the entire city, a very heavy one. Yad ha'elokim sham, the hand of Elokim. Why it says over here, well, yad ha'elokim, because they can't recognize yet. They don't recognize Yad, the hand of Yud Kei Vav Kei. At most, they can say it's the Yad Elokim that comes because of the Aron Elokei Yisrael. Va'anoshim ha'shalom mesu, those who did not die. Now we are talking about a greater intensity. We're not talking about people who were only ill. People were dying now in Plishtim. Those who didn't die, huku batchodim, were hit with these hemorrhoids. Va'tal shavat ha'ir ha'shamayim, the cry of the city went up to heaven. Now it's good. There's a question. Now we finished the whole chapter. You know, I think that's cause for celebration, and we still have time to do another chapter or two. Go ahead. Ah, the Kri and the Ktiv. The question is why the word that's written is Atholim, and the term that we read it is Tchodim. So we may not understand the. I think we don't have any more a sense of what the word Ba'afolim is. But it's quite clear that the word Afolim was an expletive. Let's say that the word Afolim was what we would consider in good company a bad word. Huh? Plague? Yeah, but it seems that Afolim is a very specific kind of plague. You see, there are all sorts of words that we know them to be bad words, and we wouldn't use them. Because in whatever language it is, you know, we can hear somebody curse or say something sort of ugly in quotation marks in another language, and it will make absolutely... we won't even sense that anything was said that was wrong. The word Afolim is a bad word. Ah, I knew I'm setting you up for that. Shia, so why is it written? Because there are two things we want to say here. Number one is, the Pasuk wants to tell us precisely what happened. but not everything that happened do you have to say. You can use a euphemism for it. So we've learned two things over here. Now, when I say that it's a bad word, I don't know, maybe it's not the kind of, it's not a bad word, but maybe you wouldn't use that kind of word in mixed company. I don't know. You see, we don't have a sense. Isn't that the beauty? Because the creed, the way you read it, is different, we have lost completely the sense of what the word afolim is. Does the word afolim, does it do anything to you when you say it? Does it say anything to you when you say it? Nothing. Nothing. But there's no question about it that at the time of the Tanakh, afolim was... when I say bad word... it could be. You see, when I say bad word, I don't... You can't make a mistake. I don't want you to think that we're talking about like a curse word or something that's nivul peh. There is no such thing, because I believe it's the Rambam. The Rambam writes in Pirkei Avos, why is Hebrew called Lashon HaKodesh? Hebrew was called Lashon HaKodesh because in the entire Otsar HaMilim, in the entire vocabulary of Lashon Kodesh, there are no ugly words. There are no Nebuchadnezzar, somebody who has to curse over here, must borrow, has to borrow from other languages. There are no dirty words in Hebrew. So they have to borrow, and they borrow. When I say here, ba'afolim, there are certain things. One could refer to, a doctor will tell you he wants to do a test on your stool, right? I don't know. We don't usually use such, waste, excretions. I don't know. We find all sorts of other words that don't make us as uncomfortable. Doesn't mean that the first word that was used is a bad or ugly word. It's just that for all sorts of situations, there are other ways to express it. For example, the Gemara in Sechta Pesachim says that the Torah at times added 16 or 17 extra letters in order to speak b'lashon nikiyah, to speak in a clean language. What's the dirty language? When you talk about a non-kosher animal, you can refer to it as behema timea, or you can refer to it as habehema asher einena tahora, a behema that is not pure. Neither one of the two is bad. There's nothing wrong with saying behema timea, but there's something more delicate about saying behema asher einena tahora, a behema that is not clean. And there are times, Torah does at times say behema tameya, because Torah has to tell us the halacha, there's nothing really wrong with it. But what the Torah at times wants to say is that it's worthwhile maybe even speaking a little bit more when you can use something that is even a euphemism for behema tameya, by saying ha behema, the animal, asher einena tahora, that is not tahor. Where does the Gemara say all of this? The first Mishnah of Masechta Pesachim. The first Mishnah of Masechta Pesachim says, Or la'arba asar bodkin et hachametz. By the light of the 14th night, of the 14th of Nisan, the search for the chametz is done. So the Gemara says, what's this mean, Or la'arba asar? We've become so accustomed to it, we don't even understand. Or when you say, let's say that a bar mitzvah is going to take place on a Sunday night, so the invitation is going to say Or Liyom Sheni, right? Tonight is Or Liyom Chamishi, but it's Wednesday night. What do you mean Or? It's dark. It's pitch black out there. They say the chuppah is going to be at 6:30. It's not going to take place till 9:30. All right. So what do you mean Or? So the Gemara says that even the word darkness has something not so delicate about it, so that the Gemara says when they want to say that on the night of the 14th of Pesach you do the search for the chametz, the Gemara wants to use a more delicate kind of terminology, and therefore the Gemara says by the light. Well, by the light of the silvery moon, it is the 14th, by the light, to the light of the 14th. No, what we're talking about is Torah is extremely, extremely delicate in its choice of words, because language is supposed to be holy, clean, pure. Which means, therefore, when I say that the way it's written is afolim, not that afolim, God forbid, is a bad or an ugly word. There are no bad or ugly words in Lashon Kodesh. But if it's a matter of describing it as afolim or tchorim, there's something more adin about tchorim. And we don't understand what any one of the two words really means. We have no feeling for these words at all, because they never became part of our vocabulary. So we have no way of knowing. All that we do learn from this is these two words, one of them is more delicate than the other. Not that any one of them is a not nice word. It's not, nothing of that sort exists. So it's very beautiful that the Tanakh is teaching us this, to use a little bit shener language. We can learn a great deal from this. All right, let's go further. The fact is that the Torim, on Torim, do you have the Kudot? Yeah? Yeah, I don't think that. Yeah. All right. Chapter 6. Vayehi Aron Hashem b'shdei Plishtim Shiva Chodashim. The Ark of God was in the field of Plishtim for 7 months. Vayikru Plishtim HaKohanim v'lakosvim leimor. And the Plishtim and the Kohanim and the Kosvim called, and they said, Ma na'aseh, what shall we do? La'aron Hashem yudkei vavkei. They've had it. They know now already that this is not just another Elohim. It's not even merely Elohei, Aron Elohei Yisrael. This is Aron Hashem, the Ark of God. Hodiyunu, let us know, how do we send it back to his place? How do we send him back to his place? The last time his place was used was when Dagon had fallen, and they put back Dagon in his place. Now they understand that the Ark of Hashem has to go back to its place. For Yomru, and they said, if you've decided that you want to send the Ark of God, of the God of Israel back, do not send him back Rekam empty. Ki hashev tashiv lo asham, you should send back with him asham, a sin offering. Asham means it's like a korban chatat, in other words, something by which we are saying that we understand our guilt. Oz peirofu, then you will be healed. V'no dalachem, and then you will know. Lama lo tosur yado mikem, then you will know why his hand is not removed from us, why we continue to suffer. So they said, Maha oshim hashem noshivlo, what is the osham? What is this sin offering that we sent him? Vayomru, so they said, Mispar sane plishtim chamisha tchodei zohav v'chamisha agberei zohav. Ki magefo achat l'chulam l'sarneichem. There were 5 major city-states that made up Plishtim. They should send, what they were going to make is sort of a model out of gold of what these boils looked like, and also 5 achbere mouses. How do I, you see, I'm 10 and a half years in this country, if I guess in the English. 5 mice. Because they, one of the things, not only they personally suffered, but their fields were being destroyed by mice. So in other words, God, it was similar to Mitzrayim, not only in their persons, but also in their possessions. Yes. You haven't had the word kosmim since Bilam. Bilam was a Kosein. Right. Now, I don't know if we've had it. You're right, I don't believe that we've had it. So in a sense, there's something very similar here to the Mitzrayim experience as well. The idea that the ones whom they looked to for truth were their
kosmim, they're magicians. Yeah, I mean, this is it's not only part of the ancient world, it's part of the of our world as well. Who was it? Reagan and Nancy used to check with astrologers. What are you talking about? What, there isn't a newspaper here, a non-religious newspaper doesn't have the horoscope. Listen, there are all sorts of problems today with a woman astrologer. No, okay. All right, we don't have to go into that. Let's go. You should make images of the tchodim, v'tzalmei ach bereichem, and images, forms of the mice hamashchitim et haaretz. Now we are told that we're destroying their... Pasuk doesn't always tell you everything as it happens. Very often you'll get information in passing later on. And you should give honor to the God of Israel. Honor to the God of Israel. Do you understand? The daughter-in-law of Eli, as she died, she calls her son E-Kavod. But names, not all names, were given in this way. If you'll go through Yeshayahu, you will see how God tells Yeshayahu to name some of his children, and how Hosea is supposed to name some of his children. One child is supposed to be Lo Ami, you are not my people, and in order to indicate that I don't accept you as my people anymore. One of Yeshayahu's children is Maher Shalal Chashbaz. I mean, quite a name to give a little kid. I don't know what they called him. Maher Shalal means that the spoil will hurry, chosh buzz. The looting is going to come quickly. In other words, names were given to represent events. Yes, so Ikavod was given, and now we see what the tide is turning. Things are changing. And now they understand that they have to give kavod l'lekei Yisrael. Ula yokelet yodomi aleichem u'me'al Eloheichem u'me'al Arzichem. Maybe his hand therefore will become lighter from upon you, upon your God, and upon your land. Lama techavdu et levavchem. Why shall you harden your hearts kasher kibdu Mitzrayim u'faro et libam, as Paro and Mitzrayim had hardened their hearts. That's the point we were making last week. They remember very well. It's 350 years later, but they know precisely what had happened. That they had hardened their hearts. Halo kasher hit aleil bahem, just as God played with them, what he did to them, vayishalchum vayilechu, and then they had to send them out, and they went. Va'ato now, kru, this is what they're supposed to do. Kru va'asu agalah chadasha. Take the materials and make a new wagon. One new wagon, ushtei forot olot ashelo ola aleihem ol, and two forot, two cows that are olot. Olot means that they had given birth, ashelo ola aleihem ol, that no yoke had ever gone up upon them, like a para aduma or like an egla arufa. But what's happening over here is, number one, we're talking about parot that are weak. They've just gone through egel birth. They've given birth to calves. They've also never been used for work, so that they're not used to it, which means that movement for them is extremely difficult. And more than that, va'asartem et haparot ba'agalah, you should tie the parot to the agalah. And remember, it's a new wagon. A new wagon means it's not yet broken in. It's difficult for the wagon to move. It's going to take time until, everything takes time until it breaks in. Va'ashivotem b'neihem me'achareihem habaita, and you should return their little calves who had been born. They should be back in the house. And then, let's see what's going to happen. Ulekachtem et Aron Hashem, you should take the Ark of God, unetatem el toal agalah, place it in the agalah, that klei hazohav, asher hashevotem lo osham, tosimu ba'argaz mitzito, and these golden images that we have made, put in a box beside the Aron, Vishilachtem oto, send it off for halach and let him go. Let the parot and the agalah go on their own. Uriitem, and then you'll see. In derech gevulo ya'ale Beit Shemesh, if it's going to go up towards the border of Israel to Beit Shemesh, remember, what are we talking about? We're talking about Plishtim is the coastal plain, the southern part of the coastal plain. You take everything from Rehovot southward. Where does Yehuda at the time begin? In the area of Beit Shemesh, Shar Hagai, we're going to see Kiryat Yarim, Telstone, Abu Gush, that's already going to be the territory of Yisrael. So he's going to leave the it sounds like the stories, remember the stories of the Baal Shem Tov. Baal Shem Tov would get into a avugin in Zoln the Fed gain, let the horses go, and wherever the horses went they flew and they took the Baal Shem. Over here it's let them go, read them. In derech gevulo yale, if it's going to go up toward its boundary, Beit Shemesh, who asalanu et haro hagadolah hazot, then we know that he, God, did this great evil to us. V'im lo, v'yadanu. And if not, then we will know, ki lo yad'o nog oponu, it was not his hand that touched us. Mikre hu hayalanu. This was all coincidence. That means even at this point, this, they're not certain. They're not certain, huh? They're setting up a test. This is a test. The cows were someplace. The calves were kept in at home, or whatever a cow home is, or a calf home. In the barn, the barn. That means all, from the natural point of view, everything was working, gravitating against these cows moving. Number one, they don't want to leave the calves that they just had. Number two, they've never carried a yoke. Number three, they're weak from calf birth, as we said. Four, it's a new wagon. Five, they can go in any one of 360 directions. They can go anyplace. North, east, south, west. Where are they going to go? They may not even decide to go anyplace. Of course a test is being set up. So watch. Why should I keep you in suspense? Vayasu Hanoshim came. The people did so. Vayikru Shtei Parot Alot. They took two cows that had given birth. Vayasrum. And they tied them to the agalah, to the wagon. Vedbineim Kolu Babayit. And their the children, the calves, they locked up in the house. Interesting, there are two words for, in a sense, lock up or incarceration or jail in the same pasuk. In Sefer Bereshit, a prison is Beit Ha Asurim. Asurim or Asirim are people in jail, and then there's Beit Ha Kele. The Kela, what do you call Kela Ma'asiyahu? You know, we know about Kelas. I'm not certain precisely what is the difference, except that maybe Beit HaAsurim may be a place where people are tied up. Maybe they're walking around with ball and chain, because Matir, we say the bracha Matir, God is Matir Asurim. Asurim means those that are bound and tied. So therefore when we're talking about the cows and the wagon, the proper one, the proper term to use is that they are tied to the wagon. And the ones that are locked up in the house, Kalu Babai, it's a Beit Kela. By your okay. Yeah, there are differences. Except that while usually there is a difference in Lashon Kodesh, there has to be a difference. You see, because in English, it's possible to have synonyms in English, because English is a language that's made up of having borrowed from 20 different languages. Lashon HaKodesh is one pure language. Therefore, for example, the position of the Malbim and the Torah Temimah and the Ketav HaKabbalah, most of the Meforshei HaTanach, the relatively modern Meforshim, begin with an assumption that no two words mean precisely the same thing in Lashon Kodesh. And we also always have to be able to differentiate between those terms that seem to us to be synonymous. But you are right. You are right in the sense, in other words, what I'm saying is that in English, you could have two words that are absolutely synonymous. But in our usage, we differentiate between them. So I don't know what the difference is between a jail and a prison. A prison seems to me something as serious as Sing Sing is a prison. The local jail in Dodge City, you know. Yeah, right. The length of time may be the difference. That's right. Very good. A prison may be some place where somebody's put away for a long time. A jail can even be similar to a lockup, more temporary. Yeah. Rikers Island is a jail and Sing Sing is a prison. And then, of course, penitentiary. That's exactly what I was getting to. We know all the Lushainas. A penitentiary is very similar to this. What did they do? Kolu Babayit, where did they put the calves? The calves, what, in the living room they put them? Babayit means in the pen. Where do you put animals? In a pen. I don't know, is that why they put the hardened criminals in a penitentiary? Basically, I don't know. It's not a class. It's not a class in English. I don't ever thought about these things. Huh? Very good. Penitentiary comes from the word penitence. I just want that to get the... Okay. Vayosim let Aron Hashem el Agolah. They placed the Aron Hashem onto the Agolah v'et ha'argaz in the box with the Arch Brezov and the Tzalmei Tchoreihem. Don't ask me what you want to ask me. Don't ask me. Why here the word Tchorim is in fact used in the Pasuk. I don't have an answer yet. Doesn't mean that I'll have an answer next week, but there's hope springs eternal. Vayisharna haparot baderech al derech Beit Shemesh b'mesila achat holchu holoch v'go'o v'lo soru yamin usmo v'sarnei plishtim holchim achareim agvul Beit Shemesh. Watch this pasuk. Every phrase in the pasuk is fascinating. Every faith, you know, the miracle that takes place is perfect. Perfect. Vayisharna haparot. The parot went straight. Vayisharna comes from the word yashar. Yashar, yashar. And these are parot that know how to go yashar, yashar. And nobody had to tell them to go yashar, yashar. And they're not going to go yamin usmo. Vayisharna haparot baderech. There are a number of roads that they could have taken. Without asking, of course, anybody, they get onto the derech, which leads to Beit Shemesh. B'mesila achat halachu. In a sense, I believe that the pasuk is saying they didn't travel as the agala or the parot travel. They went nearly as the crow flies. Because take a look at what happens. From the derech, they end up onto a mesila. What's the difference between a derech and a mesila? A mesila is a narrow path. A derech is a highway. Is a highway. An autostrade. Highway number one is a derech. And then there are paths. A footpath is a mesila. It seems they're taking a beeline or a kav avidi for Beit Shemesh, which means that if the road is going to something, the road usually is longer than the straight line, which is the shortest distance between two points. If they have to get off the derech and go through the mesila, they go through the mesila. Halo, halchu v'go'o, and they kept going. Go'o is the mooing of a cow. You know, a joyful mooing. There are different words that describe different sounds that animals make. Go'o is sort of sense of great joy and movement. Velo soru yaminu smol, they didn't turn neither to the right nor to the left. The sarnei plishtim holchem achareim, and the officers, the officers of plishtim went after them ad gvul Beit Shemesh, until the border of Beit Shemesh. Chazal, our rabbis say vayisharna. Vayisharna means something else as well. Vayisharna, of course, comes from the word yashar, that they went straight. It also means, it comes from the word shira, they sang. They sang. What does it mean, vayisharna, that they sang? I mean, cows sing. Are there other objects that, are there other, huh? Yeah, so I understand. So I want to know, what kind of song does creation sing? And that's precisely, what do we say in Kela Don on Shabbos? Tov miyori shabarol yitron dam again. Koyach imnozim yitron dam again. Ladies and fikim nega nozim yitron dam again. Smechim b'tseisom v'sosim b'voam osim b'eima ritzon ka'onam. The song that nature sings to God is not Beethoven's Fifth. The song that nature sings to God is by virtue of the fact that nature does the will of God. The greatest song to God is performing His will. The sun, the moon, and the stars, by virtue of the fact that they continue to move within their orbit, this is singing the song to God. These cows sang a beautiful song, going straight, because the song of praise is by virtue of the fact that they're just going and doing what they were created to do. They fulfilled the will of God. Vayisharna haparot. They sang. They sang. Yes. I know their ga'o is with an aleph. Ga'o, 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 ga'o. But there is something, huh? Oga is shine and brilliance. Oh, it's only just like in English. Don't we have different words to describe? Birds chirp, dogs bark, cats meow. What else? Who? Cows moo. So in Hebrew also there are different. Birds are mitzafzafim, right? Now, so go'o is the Hebrew word to describe whatever sound it is that the cow makes. That's all. Ubeit Shemesh kotsrim ktsir chitim ba'emek, and in Beit Shemesh they were harvesting the harvest of the grain in the valley. Vayisu et einem, they lifted their eyes, vayiru et ha'aron, and they saw the ark, vayismichu lirot, and they were happy to see. V'ha'agola boil sedei Yahushua Beit Hashimshi, the agola came to the field of Yahushua of Beit Shemesh, v'tamud sham, and it stood there. Stop. They stopped, the cows stopped in the field of Yahushua of Beit Shemesh. Shon Evan Gedolah, there was a big stone there. By Yevaku et Atzeha Agolah, they split they chopped the wood of the Agolah et HaParot, Helu Olola Hashem, and the Parot they brought up as an olah before God. Ba'alevim Horidu et Aron Hashem, and the Levim took down the Ark of God, et HaArgaz HaSherito, and the box that was with it, Asher, Bo, Clay, Zohar, the golden objects were in it. By Yosimu Levin Agdolo, they put it on the big stone. Anshei Beit Shemesh Helu Olot, by Yizbechu Zvachim, by Yom Hul Hashem. And the people of Beit Shemesh brought Olot and they brought Zvachim. That day, the difference between Ola and Zevach, of course, is the fact that an Ola is a sacrifice that is completely consumed before God, burnt completely on the altar. Zvachim are those who one is permitted to eat from it. The Chamisha Sarnei Plishtim Ro, the five Sarnei Plishtim, they saw it all by Yoshuvu Ekron, by Yom Ahum, and they returned to Ekron on that day. Ve'ele Tchorei Azov, Asher Heishivu Plishtim, Osham Hashem, these are the Tchorei Azov that Plishtim returned as a demonstration of their guilt before God. For Ashdod 1, Azov 1, Ashkelon 1, Gat 1, and Ekron 1. Those were the five major city-states of Plishtim. The Ach Berei Zahav, the mice that were made out of gold, Mispar Kol Orei Plishtim. This was already for all of the cities of Plishtim, the number of all of the cities of Plishtim, the Chameshet HaSranim, for the five chief cities, Meir Mivtzar Ve'ad Kofer HaPerazi, from an Ir Mivtzar is a fortified city, Ve'ad Kofer HaPerazi, an open village. The word Perazi is a word that is used, of course, with regard to Purim. The 14th day of Adar is the day of Purim for the Arei HaPrazot. Arei HaPrazot means cities that are open, cities with walls around them from the days of Yeshua ben Nun, such as Yerushalayim. They have Purim on the 15th. Va'ad Ovel HaGedola, even for a place, Ovel HaGedola, Asher Hinichu Aleha Et Aron Hashem Ad Hayom Azeh B'Stei Yehoshua Beit HaShimshi, and they in a sense they sanctified the place where they had brought where the Aron of God had come, and it is holy until this day in the field of Yeshua of Beit Shemesh. Yes. Why should it say Kohanim? Whose responsibility was it to carry the? How do you know that? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. It would be reading too much into it. It would be reading too much into it. All that's happened over here, of course, is the people who are supposed to do it, did it. I don't know. I haven't seen anything, so I'm not ready to read into it. Here comes tragedy. At the same time as there is, and this is the tragedy that has to be understood, at the moment of this great joy, Vayar Banshe Bet Shemesh, God smote the people of Bet Shemesh, Ki Rohu Ba'aron Hashem, because they had seen into the ark of God. Vayar Bam Shivim Ish, Chamishim Elef Ish, and God smote 70 men, 50,000 men. Of course, there's a problem over here. There are a number of problems. And number one, of course, we're going to have to understand why is there such a terrible punishment upon Israel? And it seems 70 men, 50,000 men. Of course, there's something missing between the 70 and the 50,000. What's missing? In Hebrew, it should have said shivimish vechamishim elavish. It doesn't say that vav is not there, which is of course extremely important. Vayit abluham, the people mourned, ki hika Hashem ba'om makor gadola, because God had smitten the people had smitten them in a very strong way. Vayomru anshei Beit Shemesh, we'll get back to the pasuk in a moment. Vayomru anshei Beit Shemesh, the people of Beit Shemesh said, mi yuchal lamod lifnei Hashem hu elokim hakadosh hazeh, ve'el mi yalem yalenu, who can stand before this God who is so holy, and to whom shall he go up from here? And they sent messengers to those who lived in Kiryat Yarim, saying, "Heishivu plishtim et Aron Hashem, redu ha'alu oto aleichem." The plishtim have returned the Aron Hashem. Come down and ha'alu oto aleichem, take him up to you. Of course, the grammar is absolutely correct. Bet Shemesh, from Bet Shemesh on, to go to Kiryat Yarim, you're moving upwards. You know, you usually have to, if you have a shift car, you have to shift the gears the moment you pass the power station at the Shar Hagai. So from Beit Shemesh you begin to go up, so they sent messengers up to Kiryat Yadim. Kiryat Yadim is, that's Telstar. Kiryat Yadim. So from there, come down and Ha'alu, take up the Aron Hashem. Oh, yes, of course. No, because it said there are Levim there. They bring the Sarnei Plishtim are standing there and watching as it arrives in Bet Shemesh. It comes into the field of Yehoshua of Bet Shemesh. The people of Bet Shemesh are very happy that the Aron has come home. Proof. The cows. I think you're right. If that's the feeling that you get, then you're right. Because that's precisely how one feels after tragedy. After tragedy, one feels the distance of God. You don't feel the closeness of God. They sort of look at this God whom they assumed or hoped, they were so happy with it, that this is the God who has now come close, the God who has returned home, but returned home in a manner that has brought tragedy. The question is why?
That's the.
It's not they want to send it up. They want the Aron out of Bet Shemesh. Because take a look, 50,000 people. Yes. Well, so that so good. So the question is, what happened over here? What happened? What happened over here is. Is first of all, one letter, and I always love what? Which letter? No? No, the verb that wasn't there is going to be an indication of the extent of the punishment. But what did they do that was wrong? Pasuk 19, in that same pasuk, Vayar ba'anshei Beit Shemesh ki ro'u ba'aron Hashem. How could that have been written in a different way? Anshei Beit Shemesh? No. Take a look at how it's written in Pasuk 13. We have to make comparisons. Beit Shemesh kotzrim k'tzir chitim ba'emek v'yisu et einayim v'yiru et he'aron. Here it says v'yach v'anshei Beit Shemesh ki ro'u ba Aron Hashem, in, but it means more than that. Does it mean? There are some who learn that it means that sort of the Aron became uncovered, and they looked in. They looked in. Huh? Question. That's a good question. What was in there? The only thing, according to the Gemara, that says that that Shaul had taken the luchot from Goliath, so there were no luchot inside. But there were others. There was the jar of the man. There may have been the shivrei luchot. Remember, the Gemara says luchot v'shivrei luchot. The luchot, the second luchot, which were complete, and the shivrei luchot, the broken pieces of the first luchot, were all in the aron. And yes, the jar of the man. And in a sense, there's the sanctity of the divine presence thereof. Ba'aron, so according to one pshat, means it was uncovered and they looked. But ba'aron means more than that. Whenever you could use S and you use ba, it means more. It means in a sense, and what happens if it becomes uncovered? So can you help yourself? You're standing there, it becomes uncovered. Ba'aron means a different kind of looking. Ure'e, betuv Yerushalayim. What does Ure'ei Betuv Yerushalayim mean? Does Ure'ei Betuv Yerushalayim look? Does it represent physical looking? It something deeper than just looking. It's sort of, maybe it's a mixture of an intentional looking with a looking of curiosity. There was something lacking over here. There was something lacking. And maybe what was lacking was, in a sense, because what happens in this parak is the comparison between the way Plishtim have learned to tremble before the Aron, and in a sense there was a certain frivolity, a lack of real derech eretz for the Aron. There's another Gemara that says, the Pasuk 13, it said, Beit Shemesh kotzrim. They were harvesting the Ktsir Chetim Be'emek by Yisbechu, and they were happy to see So there is a Gemara that says, "Hoyu kotzrin u'mishtachavim." Kotzrim u'mishtachavim. They continue to harvest and bow down before the ark. A sense of takeoff of korim u'mishtachavim. What do we say in Aleinu Anachnu? Korim u'mishtachavim. We bend and we bow before God. They were kotzrim u'mishtachavim. In a sense that maybe the feeling that while they were very happy to see it, but you know, we have to get back to our you know, business is business. Yes. Yeah. You know, I like that. There's no mention of fear. They look very good. There's no indication of fear or trembling. Rashi says that they vayismichu, they were happy. What you said is an explanation of Rashi. They were happy to see hayu mistaklin. They looked heichu bolavado, how it comes along umisimchosam, because of their great joy. Nohagu bo kalut rosh, they conducted themselves in a light-headed manner. Shaloi hayu mistaklin bo be'ema. That's, they didn't look at it be'ema with fear, derech kavod, in a way of honor. Rashi uses derech kavod because, remember, what was it that the Plishtim wanted to do? They wanted to give kavod le'elokei Yisrael, return its lost kavod. All right, I just want, huh?
How was there one carried in the bar by men?
By men.
The nearest cows.
Yeah, but they didn't know any better.
Two cows slipping it.
It's not the same. All right. I'm going to leave a further explanation of this. Just, I want to explain the lack of the Vav. There were no 50,000 people living in Beit Shemesh. Can you imagine 50,000 people dying? So the Gemara says these were 70 people who were equal to 50,000. It was like a loss of 50,000. And we know this only because of the fact that the Vav is missing. If the Pasuk wanted to tell us that 50,070 people had died, then it would have had the Vav there. The absence of the Vav speaks volumes. All right, we still have a bit more to say, but listen, two brokim today, I'm telling you, I jumped.